It's a blunted net.
This net doesn't do any damage. Doesn't have any barbed wire sewn right. into it at all.
This isn't electrified.
Live from the Mundangerous Writers Room in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 26 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about the biggest D&D news since the release of 5th edition, the Open Gaming License and the Dungeon Masters Guild announcement. But first, the Morning Glory campaign gets an up-close look at the Monster Manual, and we build a net fighter in the Character Creation Forge.
So this episode is all news. Because a ton of stuff has been going on.
Yeah, it's been a big deal.
First of all, for us personally, recording this episode has been a fun challenge because we're in the midst of the snowpocalypse in New York.
Well, we're recording at, your place. So it was fun trudging through the empty streets of New York to get here.
Yeah, actually, it was no challenge for me at all.
Well, you have to put up with me.
That's true, yeah. But more important than that, it's our 26th episode, which means we have been doing this for a half a year.
6 months.
I haven't been that committed to something in a long... Well...
You're engaged.
Yeah.
And, for now, I suppose.
And
is what you're telegraphing here.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I had no idea that we would make it to 10 episodes, never mind a full 6 months worth.
Yeah. It seems like we've finally got enough of a catalog where, the people who are hearing us for the first time are going back and listening to stuff. And I think it lends us some legitimacy.
Yeah, and also, we're also hitting that point where I've forgotten the things that we said in earlier episodes. And I'm like, oh man, I said that? That sounds smart.
It's happening in the Forge too. It's like, oh, this is a great idea. Oh, wait, that was the commando.
Yeah.
Great combo.
And then an actual, relevant to people other than just us news, Curse of Strahd got announced, the next adventure for D&D.
See, now, does a Ravenloft adventure count as a new setting?
I don't think so.
I'm sure to Wizards it doesn't.
Well, right, yeah. So they have managed to shoehorn Ravenloft into Forgotten Realms by putting it in a demiplane and blah, 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 blah. It could be anywhere in your setting, whatever, right? And that's kind of how they're explaining it. So,
I've done that in games.
Yeah. But I think that means from a... since we're talking about Dungeon Masters Guild and Open Gaming License, I think that means it's fair game for the DM Guild.
I'm hoping.
Which would be nice. I mean, that would be a whole new set of content that we desperately need because I'm tired of Forgotten Realms.
It's also an entirely new genre
in
a way, right? We can play horror games.
Right. And it's also a little bit special to me since now there's finally Ravenloft products out for 5e and I joined this game originally. Thinking that mistaking Eberron for Ravenloft.
Because I said, oh yeah, there's vampires.
Yeah, I got totally confused. They both sound kind of dark,
Yeah, you were fighting undead for a while.
It's true. All right, so speaking of that old campaign, where are we in the Morning Glory campaign?
Well, a lot happened last time. If you recall, the party had traveled back in time to Metrol right before the Day of Mourning. They had tracked Nistrum Shadar, who they believed was behind whatever cataclysm was actually going to destroy the country of Seer. They'd followed him to an observatory, there'd been a climactic battle, and they'd finally destroyed him. He was revealed to be a Rakshasa, his body burned away to ash, there's this pulse, and the mass disjunction destroys all of their magic items. And then there is an explosion at Candith Tower in the distance, and then a huge eruption of fire in the center of the city. So a couple things happen all at once. The party is basically defenseless. The bound devil that they've been carrying around in a chalice with them.
No, the bound devil that was currently serving as Bran's right arm.
Loses the shape of an arm. And turns back into his natural form.
Which is not an arm.
No, it's a 9-foot red-horned ogre type creature.
Yeah. Cloven hooves.
Yes. At the same time, the party had found a Cerberus shard with a celestial inside that they'd taken with them, and that explodes, and a Deva pops out of it, who seems very confused. And then in the distance from the direction of the center of the city, there's a brutal, spine-chilling, soul-curdling howl. And Kallax's eyes glaze over, as do Behemoth's, the previously bound devil. They both turn to look at the rest of you and proceed to attack the party.
So we didn't know why at the time, but this had something to do with them being evil, right?
All of you had to make saving throws.
It just happened that the two evil characters...
Kallax was... He was on his way to not just being neutral.
He was still evil.
He was definitely lawful.
He was lawful evil.
Of course, at the same time, as you're gearing up for potentially trying to put down some of your former comrades, all of the spellcasters realize they can't use any magic. No key points, no spells, no invocations, nothing like that. And of course, they don't have any magic items, so pretty much they're defenseless.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with an angry devil.
Right. And I think that...
And an angrier paladin attacking you.
And I think that was the point that I actually ended the session in-game. I said, and scene.
Yeah, that's right.
So then at the beginning of the next session, I presented, okay, so you're basically defenseless. But then Primus appears in front of you, and he had been called away to Whitehall in an emergency. And of course, this seems like it's also an emergency. So he appears again. Kallax... eyes sort of clear, and you know, he has his wits about him again, and Primus explains. So you can see in the distance there is this growing, generally humanoid mass that is seems to be made of like living fire, and it's several hundred feet tall and getting taller. And Primus points at it and goes, "That's Raltu Kesh, the Rage of War." A different fiendish overlord, not the one that Primus intended to release from the Silver Flame and then destroy.
I kind of imagined him in my mind as the giant devil creature at the end of This Is the End. You know, the Seth Rogen comedy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little less junk hanging in the air, but
there was he was bursting out of the ground, so you couldn't see, but yeah, his massive junk beneath the ground.
Lovely. That's a great mental image to remind myself of.
So Primus says, "I need to go try to stop this thing. It incites creatures to mindless battle. I wasn't prepared for this fight. Aaron is dead. Queen Danelle has no army that can stand against this thing."
Queen Danelle being the secular head of Seer.
Seer, yes, exactly. And he looks at you, who have no magic, and says, "And none of you are any use to me as you currently are."
I couldn't agree more.
So let's fix that. He waves his hand and then he disappears. And all of you sort of stretch and feel yourselves change form into creatures from the Monster Manual.
Yeah, you gave us printed out new character sheets.
So I picked creatures that fit the personality and sort of thematic abilities that your characters were capable of. Something that, you know, sort of your inner monster, what it would look like. So Bahar, who was the rogue and a shadow monk, became a shadow dragon. Bastion, the warforged monk, became an iron golem. Brand, who at the time believed he was serving the ancient gold dragon Sybaris as warlock.
Yeah, he had a crisis of faith. It's not a big deal.
Became an adult gold dragon. Emery, the only one of you who was actually a good person.
The only one who's a good person,
right.
Not the only one who's good aligned.
Okay, she was the only one who didn't have air quotes around good in her alignment.
Hey.
She became a planetar.
It's the only one who didn't have greater in parentheses in front of her alignment. Neutral, greater, good.
Comma, for the. Kallax, who was big and strong and tough, became a storm giant. And Lou, the aberrant warlock, grew even more eye stalks, lost her legs, and became a creepy beholder.
You mentioned Photoshop, not because you couldn't just photocopy from the Monster Manual, but because you had to balance all of them and level them out, because I think they kind of range from like CR9 to CR16 or something.
Yeah, and a lot of the abilities that monsters have aren't fitting for PCs. Either they're far too weak or just far too strong. And so in terms of balancing everything out, I was sort of shooting for around CR 18 for you guys. And, you know, some of these are like 13, some I went as high as 22, and I leveled out, you know, the DCs for your abilities, the damage that you were able to do. So depending, and of course I knew all your tactics pretty well. I knew the kind of battle that you were about to face, because, you know, I knew that you were only going to be using these sheets for one long session that was just basically one big battle.
Yeah.
And I knew the kinds of things that you were up against, so I wanted everything to actually be useful. There are a lot of abilities that monsters have that, you know, maybe they just don't come up in a particular battle, and I didn't want you to guys have anything on a sheet that you wouldn't actually potentially use or reference.
Yeah.
I did. There were a few spots where, if I had to do it over again, I probably would have changed it up. You had, as a gold dragon, had immunity to fire,
mm-hmm.
which ended up becoming very useful against a giant lava creature.
Yeah, it turns out I could just stand in his little lava aura and rock out.
It was pretty good.
But unfortunately, I did fire damage, which was less than effective.
Yeah. That's right.
So it was like hoping for the good recharge on my breath weapon. Yeah.
Right. And then iron golems, standard, get healed by fire. I left that in. I probably should have just left it at immunity, because Bastion was just like, woo, I'm gonna just jump into this guy.
Right.
This is feeling good.
Yeah, let me take a ride on that heal train.
But then you have these new forms. You hear Primus say in your heads, fly and fight.
Yeah, I would like to think it was actually the Mortal Kombat voice. Fight.
And then just techno.
Right,
KMFDM.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, we can't do that. We can't afford the cease and desist.
Oh, right. Okay, don't loop it.
Yeah.
So we'll find out how they actually did in that battle next week.
Okay, so moving on to our main topic for the week, the 5e OGL and DM's Guild.
Those are the same thing, right?
Nope.
No.
It's just confusing now. All right, so if you remember 3rd edition, you remember the OGL was basically the open license to use the content of D&D, made it all freely available, and then allowed third parties to publish material and then say that it was licensed and compatible and all those things. Basically led to every system, every setting, every concept ever getting a D20 system.
Mm-hmm. It was honestly a really great reference for players and GMs.
The SRD.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I still log in there sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was putting together an Eberron campaign, and there's not a ton of information out for 5e. And I think some of the best info was from 3.5. So, I would just go look up stuff from 3.5 that didn't exist yet and definitely use that as a base template. Because it's much easier to transfer information from 3.5 and then update it to 5e than to do it from 4th edition.
Yeah. Yeah, same thing. When I was trying to do Pirates, we didn't have nearly the bestiary that we have now, because it was still during the playtest, so I was pulling from Pathfinder and 3.5 SRDs. But anyway, so we still have an OGL. The 5th edition OGL is basically everything that's in the system resource document, the SRD, that they've released, which is not the complete 5e content.
No.
If you take a look at it, it's a big document. It's like 360 pages, but it's basically one example of each type of mechanic. So there's each race and then one subtype. There's each class and then one subtype. There's one feat. There's one background. There's a host of magic items and a lot of spells and a lot of monsters. But there are some notable omissions, I would say.
There always are, because you get a little taste first.
Yeah, exactly. There's a bunch of spells missing, for one. There's like 56, and they're primarily, I think, Ranger and Warlock spells from just looking through the list.
Well, I mean, Ranger's really powerful, so.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want anybody redesigning that boy. And then they've also renamed a couple spells. Like, for example, Leoman's Tiny Hut is now just called Tiny Hut.
Right, they've filed the serial numbers off of some spells.
Yeah. So they're not giving away their copyright ownership. Mm-hmm. And then the monsters as well, they've knocked out all of the Wizards of the Coast-owned properties. So like Mind Flayers, Illithids, Qtoa, those sorts of things.
Umber Hulks, yeah.
Right, yeah. Carrion Crawler, which is a weird thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is just sort of, oh, who came up with that name in the 70s?
Exactly, yeah.
And, well, we're not going to lose the IP, so exactly. We still have to protect it.
Yeah, but your dragons, your kind of iconic fantasy monsters, though not necessarily your D&D monsters, are in there. And basically, the idea behind this is this lets you create your own settings, your own characters, your own classes, your own adventures, however you want to. But you can't rip the system off wholesale to go develop the next 5e Modern, for example.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could just keep it in-house.
Well, yeah.
As a resource for GMs who are looking to, you know, hack together their own homebrew things, yeah, absolutely. It's very convenient to have all of this information here so that you can, you know, try to pick it apart on your own without actually having to go out and buy all of the different books.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and it does not include Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide material at all. So right. Keep that in mind. More importantly, there's nothing that's owned by Wizards of the Coast in here. So if you're going to try and create and publish something under the OGL, it's got to be all your intellectual property. But that's not the only way to publish.
Wait, really?
I know. They've got this new thing, the Dungeon Masters Guild.
Is there like a handshake or?
Yeah, there is a secret handshake. And you have to pay 50% off the top to get in.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with DriveThruRPG, which is one of
you should be.
Yeah, you should. It's the best place for digital content, basically, in gaming.
It's the place we keep sending you to buy like old Dungeon or Dragon magazines.
Yep.
To rip off the content wholesale to use in your own game.
Also, pretty much every publisher distributes their PDF copies through DriveThru.
And it is a great place for maps, like pre-made maps that look beautiful when you print them out.
So the company behind that is One Bookshelf. They've partnered with Wizards of the Coast to create a new section, a new site called Dungeon Masters Guild. And it's basically DriveThruRPG for any 5e compatible Forgotten Realms material that you want to create. And in publishing on the DM's Guild, you basically have access to the full published 5e rules.
Right, that's those core books, that's Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, that's all those published adventures that they put out.
Yep. You also get any published Forgotten Realms material, including novels. So any character, any time, any place that you want to use in Forgotten Realms is up for grabs on content that you publish on DM's Guild.
I'm finally going to be able to put together that Elminster / fiction adventure.
That was actually the first thing that I thought of as soon as I read that. not that specific / fic, but I mean, you know, it's the internet, right? They do have a community guidelines page that suggests that offensive or inappropriate material will be removed.
It'll just all be double entendres. It'll all happen behind the veil.
Look for The Black Veil, a Forgotten Realms novel by Ishan.
Piercing the veil.
Right.
What? It's about dying.
Finally, you have access to recycle and reuse all material that's currently published on the Dungeon Masters Guild, meaning you can feel free to borrow from other people's adventures, mm-hmm. including Adventures League adventure, so published Wizards of the Coast adventures, any classes that are published there, all those sorts of things. All you have to do is give the appropriate attribution, and even that they're a little bit hazy on. It's kind of like, it'd be really nice if you like kind of, you know, gave them a nod. And they've got
be a bro.
Yeah. They've got some ideas around protecting content. They don't want people publishing anthologies. They want, mm-hmm. if you're going to repurpose something or reuse something, they want it to be a meaningful addition to it, which is fair. They're also separately protecting art and cartography assets. So that was a big concern amongst a lot of publishers that I talked to, a lot of content creators was, mm-hmm. all right, so I go out, I spend hundreds of dollars on art for my adventure, for my source book or whatever, and then I publish it. And I'm charging $5 a pop or something. Mm-hmm. But anybody who buys it gets access to all of my art. That sounds like garbage. And Wizards of the Coast said, yep, that's garbage. So they've updated their guidelines. It only took them a day or two, but now art is officially protected as well.
I've been really impressed with how, at least so far, responsive they've been with a lot of this. They did an Ask Me Anything, an AMA on Reddit.
Yeah,
about this stuff,
which was, you know, as there informative as any AMA,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but they did make themselves available.
Yeah, and they've been answering a lot of questions on Twitter. So there's a lot of questions out there, and a lot of prominent writers have been wondering about these things and trying to make the decision of whether to publish under the OGL and DMs Guild. Mm-hmm. And I think they've been really forthcoming and really responsive. So that's good.
Right. Delineating the pros and cons. It does seem like they don't want people publishing on it who are later going to regret it. So if it's your thing, then you should use it. And here's how you will know if it is your thing.
Yeah. Well, and then one other limit of the DMs Guild is it has to be tied to Forgotten Realms. At least tacitly.
And at least for now.
Right. They've talked about potentially opening it up to other settings, but it'll never be a homebrew setting. So if you've got material that you've created for your homebrew world, you got to find a place to fit it in Forgotten Realms, which is convenient because there's a lot of blank space. I mean, there's a lot of filled in space, but there's a lot of blank space you could just pull from.
Yeah. Just a floating city.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I mean, I am hoping that if this works out well, they will eventually expand it to those other really popular settings.
Like Eberron and Dark Sun.
Exactly.
That's all we really care about.
I want to play you. Yeah, exactly. And Ravenloft, because that's a totally different setting.
Yeah, I'm curious to see exactly how that plays out here. Is all of Ravenloft now opened up under the Forgotten Realms demiplane banner? I don't know.
Right, and like what counts specifically as Ravenloft? Is it just Barovia?
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see, I guess. Oh, and then finally, we should talk about the economics of publishing on DMs Guild. So
nobody's getting rich.
No, that is one of the other concerns that a lot of people have expressed. Publishing on DriveThruRPG right now, a content creator keeps 65% of sales.
Mm-hmm. Assuming you charge any money.
Can also do pay what you want, or you can charge $0. But anything you earn on there, right, you keep 65%. Under the DMs Guild, you only keep 50%.
Which they've really been sort of pitching as like, wow, 50%.
Yeah. And their argument is, hey, we're giving you all of Forgotten Realms, and we're giving you kind of this walled garden to play in.
But what if I didn't want Forgotten Realms?
That sucks for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, go to use the OGL. We gave 15%. You that too. Right.
Fair point. And I mean, for those of you who played 4E, you remember how restrictive any kind of content for 4E was. Like, there just wasn't anything that you could do with it outside of actually playing the game on their terms.
Yeah. So why is this big news? And why is Wizards of the Coast doing this now?
I've said before that 5E is sort of a best hits of previous editions of D&D. And I think we're seeing that that's not just within the content. It's also within the marketing and in the way that they interact with the community. I think there are people at Wizards who understand that having the SRD, having the OGL as open as it was in 3.5 was a real boon to the community and then ultimately to their bottom line.
Yeah.
And I think they're now trying to figure out what that looks like in a system that's less Wild West than 3.5 was.
Right.
But that hopefully becomes maybe nearly as open.
Yeah, I wrote an article about the impact of this announcement for players and GMs.
Where was that article published, Shane?
MadAdventures.com.
Ah, okay.
And one of the things that I mentioned in there is this has the feel of like Amazon or Apple, right? Of a content marketplace that's actually curated so that you've got a community that's reviewing and pushing content up the ladder. Right.
Although Amazon does a terrible job of banning those anthologies.
Okay. Yeah, they don't do a good job of that. But I mean, DriveThruRPG is a lot more hands on. Mm-hmm. One Bookshelf as a company is better about that.
Right.
But yeah, this allows them to crowdsource more material, but keep the community involved in a single place where they're going to be reviewing and making sure that material is legit. So when you see something that's got 100 five-star reviews, you know this adventure is worth the $10 it's being charged. Whereas if you or I publish something and nobody knows who we are, and they go and pick it up and pay $2 for something and it sucks, they're going to give it 1 star and nobody is ever going to buy it again.
Right.
Hopefully, right? That's the model. And I think that's a good idea because, like you said, it's less of a Wild West. It's a little bit safer for players to actually put their money in. And they're not asking $60 a book or $40 a book. They're just asking for a few bucks. And most publishers that I've seen are putting pay what you want.
Right.
So if you want to see this class, hey, just throw me a dollar or two. Or don't. Download it, see if you like it, and then pay me if you do.
It does seem like Wizards, in conjunction with One Bookshelf. One, they're actually collaborating with another company.
Oh my God, I know. It's which, two.
Right, right. Also,
I mean, because they're already working with Fantasy Ground, so that's actually two partners that Wizards of the Coast has managed to find.
Which, really, for any of this digital or online anything, they absolutely need other people to do, because they've always been terrible at it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 4E character builder, right?
Yeah, when it worked. Anyway, I won't do an entire episode about that. But also, in the, you know, 10 years it's been since 3.5 and that version of OGL and the SRD, the hobby has changed so much. People don't want to buy a $40 book every month.
Yep.
But they still want all that content.
Yeah, yeah.
So there needs to be a way to, for people to buy what they want, mm-hmm. Still get it often, but not completely spend their entire paycheck on this hobby,
yeah.
Which is already expensive enough as it is.
Yeah, it's kind of a microtransaction model, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a wonderful introduction for the analog into the digital age. I think it's also doing a good job to replace a lot of the content that used to be in Dungeon and Dragon magazine. Because I remember as a kid buying those things and them having their, like, submit your idea for this and we'll, maybe we'll publish it. And I was like 11, right? So I was like putting these terrible ideas that were just like completely unworkable by somebody who'd barely played the game, right?
Right.
But, you know, they used to get a lot of content. They've basically farmed it through there. And I don't know if they paid people or they just put their name on it or whatever, if it was just bragging rights.
I believe there was some paying, but I think it was really
bragging.
Low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then
like a token amount.
But some people who wrote for Dragon are still at Wizards today, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Chris Perkins got his start writing articles for Dragon. Mm-hmm. So they've talked about that, where this is a way for them to see content creators as well and see what the community is responding to in terms of the authors out there and either use their ideas for future 5e official publications or invite them into the fold to work on new projects.
I think there's definitely an opportunity here for dedicated people who want to act as freelancers or who get really involved in the community and produce a really good product to have their work noticed and to actually, you know, make more of a name for themselves. Maybe with Wizards, but maybe just in the community itself.
Yeah.
And maybe this is the cynical side of me, but it's also a bit of a replacement for all the free stuff we were getting on the forums, because there were so many dedicated people there who would homebrew things or create things that other people could use that was just up there for free.
That's one of the themes of the AMA, where a lot of groups on Reddit, and there's a bunch of different subreddits that are focused to kind of homebrewing different things, mm-hmm. we're asking, you know, what about us? We have these communities already built in. You're going to kill our communities because people aren't going to come to us anymore. They're going to go to your community. And Wizards of the Coast basically did a shruggy.
Right.
Sorry, man. I think in reality, pricing is going to go down. Like, I think that's going to be one of the benefits for players and GMs, is just the cost of non-official 5e content is going to go down. You're going to be able to buy adventures for $5. I think it's going to be a lot of pay what you want on there.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about the BuzzFeedification of the content.
Oh, I know.
Right, like, if someone gives you 10 cents for something and you're the kind of person who just churns it out, like, I'm worried about there being an incentive to produce really good play-tested content.
Yeah, yeah.
But hopefully that's where the rating system comes into play.
Hopefully, yeah.
So please, if you're using the Dungeon Masters Guild, rate responsibly.
Yeah, if you're buying stuff on there, please rate it. Please rate it.
After you play it.
Yeah, yeah. Don't just read it and rate it. Play it and rate it, yeah.
Because this is an opportunity, I think, for the community to have a really great resource. But Wizards is doing this, one, to get the name out there, but also because they want to make some money. But for players and for people who run these games, our first priority should be making sure that it produces good products that we can all use and that we all enjoy using.
Right, because that was the other problem of the old third edition 3.5 days, was there was no real feedback system for how good this third-party content was, because it was mm-hmm. so distributed amongst local gaming stores and the internet communities hadn't really grown to that point yet. Mm-hmm. So it was tough to know, like, if I buy this thing from this company I've never heard of, is it garbage or is it decent?
Right. Of course, you know, the Dragon Dungeon content wasn't necessarily well playtested in 3.5 either.
Oh, well, I mean, or 4th edition for that matter. I think we're going to see a lot more digital tools. I mean, we currently have Fantasy Grounds as the official partner for licensed 5e content, but you're going to see a lot of people taking what's in the SRD and building tools around that. So character sheet apps, which have been aggressively taken down from app stores. I think spell databases, an actual SRD website, which is already up. It took 2 days and somebody got one up at 5esrd.com. That's amazing.
I have a lot more faith in the community in terms of developing these digital tools than I have ever had in Wizards. I mean, do we remember all of the silver light like crap that we had to deal with?
Oh, please. That's not even the worst. I submit to you Project Morningstar. The garbage app thing that they wanted, digital connected at the table experience for 5e. That
Here. I will raise you Gleemax.
I think they got it right with Fantasy Grounds. I've been really happy with what they did.
Because they're not doing it on their own. They outsourced it to a reputable company that knows what it's doing.
Exactly. And we gave them an honorable mention on the casties. But yeah, I think it's going to be better having community developers, people who care about this stuff and do it in their free time, are going to make better results than somebody who's trying to monetize it.
There are a lot of us out here who are doing this stuff for no money already.
Yeah, I know. That's what's crazy.
So it'll be good for, you know, recognition, but also I think there's the capacity for a lot of really great content.
Yeah. Forgotten Realms might be getting a little weird, though.
Because everything's got to fit in there now.
Yeah. I am curious to see in the rating system how that pans out, whether people really rate based on its faithfulness to Forgotten Realms, or whether the kind of gonzo, speculative, really off the deep end kind of changes to Forgotten, you know, basically, I fit this into Forgotten Realms because I had to publish it here, whether that stuff is going to be well-received or how that's going to go. So I'm curious to see how that is. I think Forgotten Realms fans are aggressive enough and militant enough that they'll kind of protect it, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, so I'll say on top of rating the material, leave comments about it so we know if you hated it because, you know, Mystra would never do that.
Yeah.
Or if because the mechanics are terrible.
Yeah, good idea.
So how does this impact you potentially as a content creator?
Well, I think probably for a lot of content creators, the most important thing is that it will not affect Kickstarter. You'll still be able to use Kickstarter to fund the content that you're going to sell on DM's Guild or through the OGL.
But the stuff that you are going to sell, expect those prices to go down.
Yeah. I've talked to a couple of people who are planning to run Kickstarters for adventures or modules or whatever, and they're like, well, we thought it was going to be for $10 or $15, but it looks like all the Adventurers League modules are down to $5. Mm-hmm. So we're not really sure what we're going to be able to price it at.
Yeah, it's really going to be tough to convince people to pay you more than they're paying for official material.
Yeah. The nice thing about Kickstarter, though, is it's still good for those kind of passion projects. It's great if you've got it written. You can still commission the art. So hopefully it works out fine.
Just edit those pitches.
And keep in mind, you're going to lose 50% of what you sell. So that's rough. And then how about the comparison between DM's Guild and OGL? How is that going to affect content creators?
Well, with the DM's Guild, you're going to have less control over your ideas than you would if you use the OGL.
Yeah, so your plot ideas, your characters, your locations, monsters you create, the adventures you write, classes you create, new mechanics you introduce, those are all community property. But your art is protected, so there's that.
Yeah, so if you're a prolific creator, it might feel like you're giving away a lot of this content that other people are then going to use. Now, if you are someone who actually prefers to have a lot of access to this inspirational material, it's going to be a good resource for you.
See, I think what's going to be cool about that, because truthfully, somebody uses your monster in their adventure, I mean, it sucks a little bit, but you're probably, if you're selling monsters on there, you're probably selling packs of monsters, right? Mm-hmm. So somebody pulls out one, it's not the end of the world. It's not really going to hurt you. I think what's really cool about it is that for us, if we pick up a published adventure and we say, hey, there's a really cool plot thread here that isn't being followed up on, we could write that sort of gap filler. And so if you're running an adventure going through the book and the party wants to go in a different direction, you have to create a bunch of content for that. You can then publish that content and you're fine. Same thing if that happens on somebody else's adventure that you pick up from DM's Guild. You can always kind of expand outwards and fill in gaps and utilize locations that get created for your own purposes and those kind of things. So I do like that. You can tie things together nicely.
Yeah, and if you're creating this for your home game anyway, sure, you lose 50% off the top, but previously you were getting nothing.
Well, keep in mind, the formatting is not nothing. And especially if you want to get them into print format. So that is one thing we haven't talked about yet.
Do you guys not do that? I always format for print. All my notes.
Oh, yeah.
For every session.
You spend every day in InDesign?
Yeah, constantly. Come on. Yeah.
That is one thing we haven't mentioned. You can actually publish, or you can actually do print on demand through DriveThruRPG and through DM's Guild. But the requirements for the content are significantly stricter because they obviously want it to look good on the page. So to do that, you've got to have a layout guy, and there's just the costs are going to be either in time or effort are going to be significant.
Right. Even just some of the PDFs that we've put together of the custom material from the Morning Glory campaign, just taking all of those notes and, you know, getting it into a readable format that actually looks good on the page. Hours and hours.
Yeah. And then add in, okay, so you've done that. Now add in a layer of InDesign to make sure it prints properly.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a ton of time.
Yeah. So. And that's on top of having created the content.
Right. Right. But, you know, you do have access to Forgotten Realms and all the published content, the art, maps, all that stuff. So that's a lot. I mean, that's really interesting as a content creator to go in and have free license to do what you want with that sort of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes having those available as inspiration will make you a more prolific content creator.
Yeah.
And you can also have access to the things that you can't make on your own.
Right.
You know, that are really going to flesh out the material that you actually produce.
Yeah. But, you know, the OGL is still the way that you produce a custom setting, right? If you want your own campaign setting published, go to the OGL. That's what it's there for.
Which, according to Wizard's own research, what, 40% of us play in homebrew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that, too. For things like Primeval Thule, which is a campaign setting I'm pretty excited about, Conan Meets Cthulhu. I mean, now they'll actually be licensed, right? It won't be this kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, mm-hmm. don't sue us kind of deal. So I'm happy for that part, even though I'm unlikely to take advantage of the OGL.
I like the safety net that it provides. You know, you don't want to put all of this effort into creating a product and just sort of hope that you're not going to get shut down in the future.
Yeah. And then if you happen to own or have created a different game, right, and you want to bring that into 5e and sort of use those new mechanics with 5e, I mean, I think the OGL gives you the opportunity to do that. You can update mechanics for a modern game mm-hmm. rather than some of the, you know, I know there's some projects around the OSR, the Old School Revolution, to sort of, or Old School Renaissance rather, to bring them into a 5e type game out of 3.5. Simplify the math, streamline the mechanics, that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. and kind of recapture that feel of the old red box games.
It'll be nice to see what we all produce.
Do you hear that, Isha?
Is that IP lawyers committing ritual suicide?
I think that's going to be a little bit different sound. But that sound can mean only one thing, that it's time to move on to the Character Creation Forge. Before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane, at Mundangerous, that's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan, at Evil Sans Carne, that's Malice Minus Meat.
And you can tweet at the show, at TPTcast.
You can also email us if you can't fit your message into 140 characters, at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And last but not least, you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrillCast.com. So today in the Character Creation Forge,
we have, I don't want to call it our first failure, because it wasn't.
Yeah, but it is, this is the first one that I'm not happy with.
Yeah, so, you know, the topic for this week, we came up with quickly because, you know, this is breaking news about the DM's Guild and the OGL. So we were going to build a sneak thief. We'll have that for you next week. We wanted to build a net fighter for you. A gladiator uses a net, probably a trident in the arena.
Yeah, sort of the classic Roman gladiator.
Mm-hmm. But nets are terrible.
Nets are not good.
And they're honestly poorly designed.
So the first problem with the net is its special ability, the idea that it restrains you if it hits you, mm-hmm. has a fixed DC.
Yep, never scales.
And it can
DC be... DC 10.
Right, yeah. Strength check.
Mm-hmm.
Or you deal, what, 5 hit points of damage to it?
To the net.
To the net.
Right.
So that doesn't work very long.
And you can't use a net on a creature larger than large size.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is bad. But potentially, if that's part of your other actions, that could be valuable because granting a restrained creature, he has disadvantage on the rolls and you will have advantage on attacks against him. He has no speed. So that's helpful if you can knock him prone, for example. I mean, there's different things you can do there, right? And then the special rules for the net get in the way even worse.
Mm-hmm.
If you make an attack with a net, you cannot use any of your extra attacks.
Right. What is the point of... it's already bad enough.
I know. Yeah.
Were they worried about these overpowered net builds?
Yeah, I know. that's what's crazy about it, is it's just like... Okay, so naturally, if you can't use your extra attacks, you think, well, maybe I can use it to weapon fighting, right? Mm-hmm. I'll use my offhand attack with my net, which doesn't do any damage anyway. Can't do that because a net isn't light. So like, you're stuck. Like, not only could you not have attacked with a net first and then stabbed things, but yeah, no, it's...
it's really pointless. Even at low levels, it's often pointless, but at high levels, it's not even a speed bump.
No.
It's a waste of your action to throw the net.
Right. So we had to get a little creative with how we're going to apply nets.
Yeah. We decided to go with the feel of the character.
Right. a magically enhanced version.
That's right.
All right. So what are the low-level magical replacements for a net?
Well, the first one that comes to mind, I think, for most people is the web spell. But at second level, earliest you're going to get that is level 3, and that's only with a full spellcasting class, because only Sorcerer and Wizard get it.
Yeah.
And that's really tough to survive in the arena for 3 levels with D6 hit points.
Yeah, so we don't want to start with a pure spellcaster to get that.
Right, so what other options are there?
Well, there's Entangle, which is a druid spell that basically webs you from the ground up.
So does the flavor text imply that there needs to be plants around?
It's not clear to me. Right. Previously, you would say that because it was the plants that were around were magically enhanced to do this. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's just kind of conjures them up from nowhere. So okay. I guess it could work. And you could always kind of reflavor the visual effects so that it looked like a net.
Right. But it could be tough with a stickler DM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the safest one, in my opinion, is Ensnaring Strike, which is a ranger spell that uses a bonus action to cast.
So it's one of those types of spells where you cast it and then it empowers your next melee attack.
Or your next melee hit.
Hit. Oh, yeah. Okay. So it charges and stays on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's concentration for 1 minute. And when you hit with it, it forces a strength saving throw. And if the target fails, then they are restrained and they take damage at the start of their turn.
Right. Which restrains like the net, but at least they're taking some damage.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So it's a nice little enhancement, and it doesn't mess up your attack economy either. So mm-hmm. I think it's a good mix.
At least at low levels.
Well, it scales.
Yeah. Well, you've got good wisdom.
Well, yeah, if you can pass the DC. But the damage does scale if you are willing to use higher level spells.
Right. So the thing that we're looking for in a net fighter built for gladiatorial combat is this ability to restrain, but we also want them to be good in melee and ranged combat.
Yeah, the idea of the gladiator with a net and a trident was that he fought wild animals in the arena.
Mm-hmm.
He would net them to restrain them, and then he would stab them with a trident or keep a distance and throw his trident.
Right, of course, so why can't the net restrain anything larger than... Anyway.
Whatever. That's fine. but so we want to kind of keep that intact, right? So our action economy needs to be focused around throw the net, do extra damage with the trident, and then keep rolling.
But you just threw your trident. Now you don't have a weapon.
Draw an extra trident. Carry lots of tridents.
What if you have one magical trident?
Okay, well, fine. Then we'll create a way to bring it back.
Okay, well, I think we're beginning to see a build take shape here.
Yeah.
We also want access to those higher level options, web, I think specifically.
Definitely, because web is a full action to cast, but mm-hmm. it has a much larger area effect and it's more reliable.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when creatures are restrained, you have advantage on attacks against them. So it would be nice to be able to take advantage of that.
And they also have disadvantage on their attacks.
So what did we come up with?
Ranger 2.
Ah.
Bladesinger 3.
Well.
Because that will get us our web mm-hmm. quickly. Rogue 3.
Which I'm guessing gets us assassinate.
It gets assassinate.
That's right.
And 2d6 on our sneak attack.
Mm-hmm.
Eldritch Knight 12.
And if you remember, Eldritch Knight at level 3 gets the weapon bond ability, which lets you summon your bonded weapon. You can have up to two of them with a bonus action, which means throw trident, bonus action, back in my hand, throw trident.
Here's the thing, is I always kind of overlook the Eldritch Knight because I feel like just taking a Battlemaster fighter and a spellcasting class is a better use. But I think we might have stumbled on an actual viable use of the Eldritch Knight thematically.
I have always liked it in theory. And I love the fact that, you know, you get some spells. That's nice. But you eventually end up with three attacks if you're multiclassing it a little bit.
Yeah. And with Eldritch Knight 12, we're getting the second extra attack at 11. We're also ending on an ability score increase. So that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Bladesinger gets us intelligence to AC. So this is a dex int based character. They're probably going to go first. They're going to pop up the blade song.
Yep.
They're going to assassinate. And then if that doesn't get people to give up or die, then out comes the restraining.
Exactly. Or you have the option to use an ensnaring strike on your assassinate attack,
mm-hmm.
which will basically keep the advantage on your attacks rolling. But, you know, when a build is based on getting advantage on your target, it seems natural to put Rogue in there because that's how you really press that advantage with sneak attack, right? So that's how we ended up at Rogue. Plus, you get that expertise
mm-hmm.
for persuasion.
Exactly.
Because you are a performer, sir, even if you're not particularly likable naturally.
That's right. The thing that keeps you alive in the arena is the crowd.
Exactly.
Not your combat abilities.
Exactly. So, you know, you're probably a... not a very likable person. You're really smart. You've probably got some wisdom if you're using that ensnaring strike. You want to buff that DC. You're not particularly strong. You're more fast and shifty,
mm-hmm.
but you really know how to sell it. Really know how to sell it,
yeah.
You know? And also, it's probably a good idea to go ahead and take your other expertise, take persuasion, and then go ahead and take acrobatics in case somebody tries to do this to you.
Right. Plus a few handsprings. The crowd loves that.
Yeah, yeah. So what's our background for our gladiator? How does he come upon this path?
Well, in a world where a net is so badly designed, no one would really want to use it.
That's true.
But you don't get to pick your weapons in the arena.
That's also true. That's a big hamper to a gladiator fighting off wild animals in a gladiatorial arena, right?
Yeah.
Might be unfamiliar with your weapons. Or they might just suck.
Right. I think she had bad luck. She was often assigned the net.
Oh, okay.
And realized, okay, it has occasional uses, but I really need to figure out a way to get around all of these drawbacks.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Because for one of these days, like, it's going to get me killed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she begins studying magic somehow?
Yes, because popular and successful gladiators often get the best training.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. So it's a patron, really, who owns her, or at least owns the rights to her promotion, who is helping her along.
Yes, I think so. An elven one, which is out. She's got to be an elf or half elf in order to be a bladesinger.
Yeah, yeah. So she's going to be a wood elf, right?
So she can hide in her own webs.
Yeah,
because it makes the terrain lightly obscured. Yes,
that's I like a great that idea. Yeah, I like that. That's great for your gladiatorial display too, you know.
Yeah.
Just suddenly disappear from the crowd.
I bet it's how she eventually escapes the arena, because, you know, by like level 5, an arena shouldn't really be able to hold you.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. So I would play up the ranger aspect at the beginning and say that you were a hunter, a tracker. You captured animals for the arena. That was sort of your background. And then you were pressed into service as a gladiator as a result of maybe some slight that you committed against your master. So you came in knowing the animals that you would be facing, but not necessarily familiar with all of the other aspects of the arena. And when you're not able to use your traps and those types of things that you have available in the forest, when it's just a net, you quickly realize, I got to get a lot better at this.
Right.
Right. So I like that the web spell sort of has a bit of a natural component to it. So that kind of fits well into what the ranger would do. And so you're a ranger through and through, right? I mean, you're an elf because you become a blade singer, but you've got the rogue element to it, right? That's kind of in your nature. You're a stalker and you're a hunter and you're that sort of thing. Until eventually you just give up on that path and you decide, you know what's beneficial? Lots of magic.
Right. Arcane magic.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of attacks. and I'm still going to do this thing that I do, but now I have freed myself from servitude and I will never go back.
I do like to think that, you see, an Eldritch Knight gets two bonded weapons. I like to think that one of them is a net.
Is a net, yeah. Just in case.
Right.
Just for old time's sake. All right, it's about that time that we should beg for reviews. If you want to support the show, the easiest way to do that is to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you're willing to help us out and leave a 5-star review, we will read it on the air.
You can also find us on Stitcher. It's like a Pandora for podcasts. If you like or favorite us there, the algorithm will help other people find us.
And we have a 5-star review. Ishan, would you like to read it?
This is by TigerRaven1980. I don't play D&D, but I love the show. 5 stars. Hosts Shane and Ishan are two awesomely epic D&D players who don't hesitate to bring out their epic level feats to the party. The recaps of their game session keep me riveted, and the gonzo things they come up with in the character creation forge are inspirational, to say the least. While I'm not a D&D player, I still tune in every week to listen to the best D&D podcast out there.
Thank you for the kind words. I do wonder, Ishan, what does it say about us that so many of our listeners are not D&D players?
Did we maybe chase them away from the hobby? I used to love D&D, but then I listened to the Total Party Thrill.
they've convinced me that D&D is terrible, but I like them. Crap.
Their constant complaining has shown me the light. Now I play GURPS.
Oh, it's a fate worse than death. So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're actually talking about intra-party conflict.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
Well, as promised, perhaps the cause of that conflict, the Sneak Thief.
Well, that's it for episode 26 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we've lived up to our name. But either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.